Welcome to Turn the Page, the official podcast of the Syosset Public Library.
Hi, this is Evelyn.
And Jessica, and we're here with
Madeline Berg.
And welcome to Turn the Page at Syosset Library. So Madeline is a longtime resident and patron. We've known her children, we've known her for a long time, and she wrote a book. Would you like to tell us about your book?
So the book I wrote is OMG, You Think I'm Fat, How to Talk or Not Talk to Your Child About Weight.
We can all relate to that.
It's tough being, I guess, on either side of that, but...
Well, the reason I wrote the book in the first place is because I have a big weight loss practice right here in Woodbury, and I would just listen to all the stories of all the people that came through my office who were still struggling with their weight, and every session started with what happened to them in childhood. How that they were probably overweight or almost overweight as a kid, and what their mom usually, but sometimes both parents, sometimes grandparents, did to try to correct the situation. So no matter how old this person was now when I was talking to them, they were still talking about the injustices that happened to them when they were a kid, and they're still struggling with being overweight. So whatever their parents did didn't work.
That's interesting because it plays into the psychology of everything.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, I can relate 100%. I have a daughter that, unfortunately, I carry out the same stuff that my mother did to me. I haven't changed, and I certainly need the help to learn how to do that. So I understand. And in reading your book, which I very much enjoyed, thank you for writing it.
Thank you.
I still don't know what to do, though, because I'm troubled. So tell our listeners, give us some advice.
What have you heard? What do you recommend?
You know, it's really, really hard because like what Evelyn just said, it goes from generation to generation. So you're just carrying out what your mom did to you and you're inadvertently doing it to your daughter is because we're too afraid to do nothing.
Right.
So what all I hear the time from my parents when they come to me, I can't just do nothing, like very emphatically. Like if I do nothing, she's going to continue to gain weight. And my point is, I'm not asking you to do nothing, but I'm asking you to please stop doing what you're doing because it's not working. And this is like really interesting fact is that if your child thinks that you think they're overweight, regardless of what their weight is, they're much more likely to become overweight.
Wow.
That's interesting.
But don't they have to want, isn't it like the most important thing is a child has to want to watch what they're eating. You can't force anybody to, I mean, you could not bring it into the house. I understand that. But in this day and age, these kids could get everything.
You know, and my, just to kind of throw that in there, and this isn't a parent and child, but like with my grandparents, when and my grandmother, I know, you know, she had this thing where she had to be a certain weight all the time, and I know she pressed on her kids about it, and it waterfalled out to everybody else in the family, including myself, just, you know, the lessons that they learned because they thought that this was how you're supposed to do this. But my grandfather, you know, he'd been skinny and then not so much when he got older and he had to lose weight. And my grandmother would be like, well, we're not keeping this in the house. Well, whenever we'd go anywhere with my grandfather, we'd open up the glove compartment and guess what would be in the glove compartment?
Yankee Doodles, like my father.
Chips and candy. So yeah, like Evelyn said, okay, so, you know, so really there's a foundation of it, which...
But the real point of this is that you can't ask a child to do something that a grown-up can't do.
Right.
Good point.
That is just too hard. So to have it in the house and to ask the kid not to eat it, it's too big of an ask. Because if it's in my house, I'm eating it. So
yes.
You have to assume if you're bringing it in the house, you're sanctioning whatever it is, and you can't, and your kid might eat the whole thing. And you can't stop them. Because there's nothing more aggravating than someone telling you you've eaten enough. You know, or you've eaten too much, or you have to stop eating now. Because how is a child ever going to develop their own sense of hunger or fullness if we're always telling them, you're hungry, you're full? We completely short-circuit the whole idea of intuitive eating that way.
What about the fact, which you've brought up in the book, when you have children with two totally different body images, and not only body images, but actual bodies, and one can eat everything, how do you deprive that child of not having it in the house for the other child who really shouldn't be eating it? How do you, what do you recommend in that case?
Two things. One, kids know fairness more than anything else. So if you are unfair to your child, that's what they pick up with, and they don't let go of that for their whole life. You favored him over me because he got a better lunch and I had to bring cottage cheese to school. And that's kind of hard to recover from. So healthy eating is healthy eating. I don't care what your weight is. Whatever I'm going to say, it goes for everybody. And one child is not singled out and put on a diet. If we want to make a change, it's the whole family. And no one's punished. I don't feel like my kids are punished because I'm cooking them dinner every night and not ordering in Chinese food like some of their friends. And I don't feel like they're punished because I'm making them breakfast and packing their lunch. I feel like they're lucky. But I'm treating them all the same.
Yeah.
But what about that child that just wants that cookie and it's not really going to affect them?
So, listen, if you're giving a cookie to your son, you're giving a cookie to your daughter. You cannot do it, work like that. And you know that I'm right because you've tried that and your daughter still has a problem. I mean, the whole first chapter of my book is just convincing parents that everything they tried so far isn't working and trying to get that message, because going back to the, I can't just do nothing. And I'm like, fine, you've done all these things, yet you still picked up my book because you have to read it because what you did isn't working. So now please can we try something else?
So basically it's like you haven't done nothing, but what you've done has done nothing.
Right.
Exactly. Yeah.
Perfect. Jessica. Yes. That's exactly right.
Yeah.
But you know what? It's done worse than nothing, because now nothing would be neutral. But now you're setting up the dichotomy of throughout your whole life, there's good food, there's bad food. I'm a good person if I don't eat it. I'm a bad person if I do eat it. I don't want my kids to grow up and thinking that they're bad people because they like to eat cookies.
Right.
That's true. Yeah.
And if I bring cookies in the house, I'm the mom. I'm obviously saying this is good for you to eat because I bought it.
Do you have cookies in your house?
100%.
Okay.
But there are some things I won't buy.
Go for it.
I don't buy donuts. I feel like they're a gateway drug. You start with eating a donut, I don't know where you're going to go from there.
You know, it's funny. That's the one food I could pass up and never even ever eat a donut.
But my kids get donuts on the outside. Right. I don't forbid them from eating donuts.
Right.
I just don't bring them in the house.
Okay.
So if there's something that really, really bothers you, don't buy it. Because you can't control it. You can't bring it in the house and then tell them not to eat it. It doesn't work like that.
So what else is in your house?
Besides cookies?
Yeah.
I think my fourth is a huge fan of Klondike bars.
Oh, okay.
All right. I mean, and they make them in so many different flavors now. So.
Yes, they do.
And they're always on sale at ShopRite. So.
Yes, they are, and Stop and Shop as well.
But in general, like, you talk about healthy eating and healthy cooking, so it's not just like don't eat that cookie. There's a whole picture, and also with the way that you discuss weight. So, what do you recommend in your book when you're broaching the topic?
First of all, everyone, shush. We're not talking about this. This is not a topic that we're going to have a nice discussion about.
Okay. Like,
as you know, because you've met them, I have four kids.
And they're lovely, and I've seen them grow up. And
right. But what I want to say about that is they know about good nutrition not because I gave them a nutrition lesson, not because they learned about it in school, because that's just what we do. There is not a discussion. Mom is never on a diet. I don't eat a protein shake or a boxed meal or skip lunch. I sit and eat dinner with my family at the table, and so they know what's up.
And it's a home-cooked meal.
That I made every night.
You're a wonderful mother.
I do try, my son will tell you, to get two meals out of one cooking session.
Okay.
But
that's good.
This is how I look at it. So when they were all like living in my house, they know what's going on. Now when they got their licenses and they were in high school, fast food bags started to show up. I didn't make a big deal about it, but the older two certainly have come back to the other side, and they chose for themselves that they want how they want to eat and how they want to live. Now, my third one probably still is having soda for breakfast at college. I can't stop that. But he's going to come around.
I do think that soda for breakfast college mentality, it doesn't, being one of those people, it doesn't last.
No, I'm not making a federal case about it, sure. Except for his cavities. So we had one discussion
right, that's
about
a
that.
Problem, yeah.
Right.
But, and, you know, in terms of like how to teach your kids, by example, there are no words about this.
And the same thing by example is the exercise, too. You have shown them how important that is also, I'm sure.
Right. So if you called my house at midnight and my kids thought I wasn't home, I think this actually happened. One of them answers the phone and is like, I think my mom's riding her bike, which I obviously wasn't. But and that's their mind. That's what I'm doing. I never force them to exercise. It's like just part of who wants
it
to
should
go
all, to? It should feel good.
Right.
That's the other thing. It should feel good. Like if it feels good, you're going to want to do it more. You know, they talk about like that runner's high. Because it does. Like when you get to a point,
right.
It feels good. And then you feel, you look good because you feel good.
Right.
It's like a ground up effect. But I do, you know, you do learn from example. I mean, if children see their parents cooking, they'll be more apt to play cook, which then, you know, carries on to their interests. And I mean, you know, as librarians, we're taught if you see your parents reading,
right,
they'll be
exactly.
readers.
It's
why wouldn't it be
thing?
The same thing? Yeah.
It's exactly the same
it's
thing.
It's like my niece, when she comes over, she plays restaurant because she's so used to eating out all the time. So she plays a restaurant. And my daughter has to, you know, she writes down and then we have to sign the check and the whole bit. She plays restaurant.
Right, which is super cute.
But my sister does cook. But yet, that's what influenced her, is the restaurant. Yeah. So they.
But again, talking about going into a restaurant, if you take your child into a restaurant, a burger place, you can't ask them not to get a burger. You brought them there, so know where you're going. If you a burger and fries, that's what you get at a burger place.
That's true. They can come out with as many salads as they want at McDonald's, but
the kids only
they're
want
never.
The
but they're not redoing like the Big Mac. They're constantly redoing their salads because what sells is. The burgers at the burger place.
But the interesting thing is, like at McDonald's, is just having the salad on the menu makes people feel better and healthier about themselves, but nobody orders it. It's enough that it's
exactly. Well, that's, yeah, and that's my point. Like, I can think of about 10 different times they've reworked their salads. I'm making quotations in the air because you can't see, there's no visual. But they haven't, it's not like they're constantly reworking their Big Mac because they want people to buy it. People are already buying it. If anything, they're adding an extra patty on it. So
and more special sauce.
So you're right. You do. You and more special sauce. So you do have to really like. You can't just go into if you're going to take your kids to a fast food place, you can't be like, yeah, and you're getting the salad. That's not going to happen.
Right. They're going to be eating fast food.
There's no happy meal for salads. But what about this Burger King, the Impossible Burger? What do you think of those things? Those plant-based?
Oh, horrible. Just horrible. It's
They're
so greasy and just disgusting.
Yeah,
just
I don't like that either. It's like, why do you... I mean, I understand some people are vegan, but they're not the people that are going to Burger King. Why do they need a substitute?
I think... I mean, they might be trying to court those people.
Yeah,
I don't know if they would, but...
I don't know. It looks nasty to me.
Again, look, you can't control your child's weight. And parents don't want to hear that. You think that there must be something you can do to stop this.
There's a magic pill out there.
But, and again, and a parent's having a trouble controlling their own weight. Mm-hmm. So, okay, what are you doing to stop this? And how do you expect your kids to do more than you?
That's a good point. And psychologically, it doesn't seem to be working in general. So,
you know what? I think one of the most heartbreaking things that I see in my office is the mom comes in and I don't see kids, but every once and again, one will like slip through. They convince me, I'll let them come in. But even to see the kids there or not there, I will see the parents on their own without their child to trust talk strategy. And the mom will say, sometimes in front of the kid, I just want him or her to be more confident. So right by saying that, you are just now equating that they can't have confidence because they're overweight, right? And that's a great confidence robber right there. So if you want your kid to have more confidence, you have to be more confident because they're watching you. And like the mom is the most beautiful person in the world for their child.
That's, yeah.
And if, you know, so your kid's looking at you and you're like saying bad stuff about your own body, they're saying, wow, mom's so gorgeous, but she thinks that there's something wrong here. So how am I ever going to be good? Because mommy is so gorgeous, but she doesn't think so, so I'm never going to be gorgeous. So right there, you just robbed that confidence from them.
So in the case of modeling, and modeling, you know, just in general, what would be a better approach if the parent was talking, you know, if like you're having a conversation all together?
Who am I talking to exactly?
Ha. Well, let's say you're talking to the child.
I would not talk to the child. I'm really...
You're really on the... Let's not have this conversation.
Unless the kid can drive to me, right, or like has extreme extenuating circumstances, I'm right, not talking to the child. And I don't want the parents to either, because here's what a lot of parents do. All right, now, we're healthy eating. We're starting Monday. We're cleaning out the house. This Evelyn's nodding like this has happened.
Yeah, 100 like, times.
This is 100 times. Thank you. And 100 times it's failed.
Yeah.
So no announcements. I want parents to do is not change everything at once, but behind the scenes, make a couple of changes. My kids will say to me, hey, Mom, Aunt Nancy has, I don't know, Cocoa Puffs. Do you know where to get them? And I'm like, yeah, I'll ask her. But I never get them. Just because they asked, that's not good enough reason for me to go get it.
Right, right.
And again, I just put, just, okay, I guess the best way to say this is when you first have your children, they are either on a bottle or breastfed, and the natural progression, then they go maybe to baby food and mm-hmm. then to toddler type foods, and their progression just keeps changing. So ultimately, I would like them to completely skip over that chicken nugget phase, but let's say chicken nuggets and pizza and fries happened. Now we're just progressing to more of an adult type food, but we're doing all these things without an announcement. We are just doing these things, and it's very natural to have your shopping list change over time.
That's true. I mean, it's true. Changing. It's right. You know, if you're buying, you know, formula, for instance, you're not going to do that forever. I mean, even if you're breastfeeding, like that's not on
it
your menu, but
it
has to come to an end. So that's true. And I think, you know, I mean, my children have had they're younger, and their bedtime is usually earlier, but as they get older, we've been integrating more family dinners into our lifestyle, where we do eat the same thing, and they might not love what we're all eating at first, but eventually, like, this is what we're eating, and it's part of family together time, and it should be a positive experience. You shouldn't be dreading mealtimes.
100%. And look, I've made so many dinners that not all my kids ate. But, you know, I have 4 kids. So I'd be like, all right, well, 50% of you ate. That's pretty good odds. 3 kids ate 75%. That's pretty good. So if someone doesn't eat, they're not going to die. I'm not having a battle over this. They actually once said to me, do you think it's weird that you just cook dinner for yourself? And I'm like, no, I'm hoping that you people will eat it one day. You know, I made enough for you, but I'm not going to dumb it down.
What's a typical dinner in your house?
You know, it's interesting because I've got it down to now it's a protein and a vegetable, and I have nothing against the side dish except that I'm lazy on time.
Okay.
So I just phased that out because I don't want to do one more pan, and no one even asked for it.
Really?
No one's like, hey, where's my rice? Where's the potato? Every once again, they'll be like, can we have a potato? And if I have one, I'm like, sure. But if they're not asking, I'm not making one more pan.
That's
they would be asking in my house.
Yeah, they would be.
So we're going to have to try to phase that out, that little bit of rice.
But again, without an announcement.
Without an announcement, right. Yeah. Without saying, we are no longer having rice in this house. Like, it's just not going to be there.
Right. It just isn't. And like with so many things, when you start thinking about it, that's naturally how it occurs. Like maybe we went through an eggplant phase and we're out of that. Or that zucchini noodle phase, the zoodles, and we're out of that. And now everyone's doing cauliflower rice. Right. And then that's going to go away.
Right. That can't be here forever.
Right. Either. And then you'll find the next thing. And and that's just the way that it is.
You know what? I just want to backtrack a little bit, Madeline. Just tell us your credentials. That wasn't anything that I think everybody would want.
How long have you been? I think you mentioned you have a practice here in Woodbury.
Right. So I've had a practice here for about 10 years. I've been a nutritionist for a really, really long time. And I have, if you saw my office, you see my amazing credentials, Cornell and NYU. And so I have like all the boxes checked off. But I think what makes me good about my job is not all the school I have, but because I broke every rule. So it's like life experience, and all the people that I've seen over time that were gracious enough to share their stories with me, I learned from that. And all the stories had a commonality to it that I had to get that down on paper, because as different as they were as people, all these stories were the same. And it's my mission now to stop it. It's going from generation to generation to generation, is to save the next generation from this.
I think it's I think it's really important. I mean, and I don't think fad dieting has gone away at all. I mean, I remember like visiting family, and the wife was on the cabbage soup diet, and her husband was a big cook, and we'd all be eating these beautiful steak dinners with, you know, like grilled veggies, and she would sit there with her unfrozen cabbage soup.
Looking
punished and sad. But here's the kicker, and I'm sure you already know the punchline. She didn't lose any weight.
And you can't live on cabbage soup forever.
Like, she always, it didn't
I know.
Do anything.
I know. That's right. Exactly. That is so completely my point. And the other thing is, people like to make such a big show in public about their ordering. Why they chose this. Why they didn't choose that. Such a pain in the restaurant. I'm like, I don't really care why you chose it. Shush, everybody. Keep those crazy thoughts in your head. And then when the waitress or waiter comes over, place your order. We don't have to know every thought process.
Do you think they're justifying it to the people at the table to make themselves feel better, to make themselves look better?
Just like the cabbage soup woman.
Right.
She had to make a big show in public that she was taking care of the problem.
Yes.
But in private, who knows what was happening.
Right.
And so part of our problem is, and I also address this in the book, is that weight stigma has been going on for years. And our thoughts haven't changed.
No, it's, I'd say.
Yeah,
it's
no, if my in family, I can agree with that 100%. How do you feel about all these Instagram photos of food every time these young kids go out? They have to show their food, what they're eating. So
I will say, sometimes it's, and I do like watching cooking shows. Yeah. I find it inspirational as somebody who has kind of learned to enjoy cooking, to watch people cook. But, and sometimes meals look beautiful, but,
the Instagram, it's fine. Every once and again, I'll comment on one of the photos, and my comment is always, I'm going to be in business forever.
Right.
So, but the truth is, we were never supposed to have so much access to food. So everything about how we live now is trying to make us fat. And so the default option in this country is to be fat. There are more people who are obese and overweight than of normal weight. So if you don't want that to be you, you actually have to opt out of being fat and go against the grain. And that's a big ask. And that's a big ask for a kid. Because here's the thing. I know this girl. She went away to college and she gained 40 pounds. She wasn't any worse than any of her friends. They were all eating pizza in the middle of the night. She just had her one slice. She wasn't eating her own whole pie, you know. But she was the one who gained the weight. So these people who are gaining weight, they're not bad people or are doing anything different than what I'm doing. It's just their metabolism is such that it's unforgiving, and they body can't process all this food that's available to us. But other kids, they could eat whatever they want, never gain a pound.
That is very true.
So another thing that I see parents come into a lot is they don't want their kid to get bullied. They're like, well, if my child's overweight, they're going to get bullied, like we just talked about, you know, how they're discriminated against the overweight, and especially like even by family or in the work site or at school. But what the parents don't realize is that inadvertently, many parents become the kid's first bully.
Mm-hmm.
Because they do things to the child that they're saying maybe lighthearted or if it's a joke, but the kid takes it really, really hard. Or I know one girl, her dad called her chunky monkey. Someone else, the dad was always pinching the fat under her chin. Someone else getting the fat in her abdomen. So all these things, you're worried about like a child bullying your child. Look a little bit closer to home and see if you have always been as kind as you could be.
Not always been as kind. I get that. I do it, unfortunately, and it has been done to me also. So, like you said, it's just one generation.
You got to break the cycle.
Break the cycle.
So relationships can be repaired. And who hasn't made a parenting mistake? We all have. We are human, right? It doesn't make us bad parents, just human ones. So it's okay to apologize to your child, to say, I've said these things. I probably hurt you. I am sorry. Like, I will not say these things again. How did it make you feel when I pinched the fat on the back of your arm? I'm like, very, very sorry. Right. Or whatever it is, we're allowed to apologize. It can be heartfelt. It can open up a conversation. You can say, I didn't realize that I was being so hurtful.
That's and I think it is just in general in parenting, it is important that your children know, like, that you're not infallible and it's okay, you know, to own up to your mistakes. I think that's a very, we're talking about modeling. That's a good way to model.
I mean, like, so the teaching moments that maybe you thought that we'd be talking about on this, you probably thought it was going to be more about health and nutrition, but it's about repairing relationships, because that's what this whole thing is. Because kids want to make us happy. That's what they do. They're trying to please us. But if they feel the only way to please mom is if I don't eat the cookie or if I lose weight, it's a problem. And one of the huge problems that happens is, and this ultimately could result in disordered eating or eating disorders, is that, you know, the kid gets praised so lavishly for losing weight that they keep losing it, or mm-hmm. what happens when they gain the weight back? And now they're feeling their self-worth really takes a hit because, wow, dad thought I was so gorgeous when I weighed 100 pounds, but now that I weigh 200 pounds, you know, am I not gorgeous anymore?
Two times the amount of love, though.
But that's not how it feels. It doesn't feel that way.
You have to feel comfortable in your own body. And if your psychology is that your body is you and your worth, the comfort isn't going to be there as your body, you know, when your body is not what it is when you're getting that praise.
Right. So yeah. It's really tricky. You're like, how come I can't tell my daughter that she looks better? I'm like, shush, you can't say that. You can say, wow, you look so happy today. Like, where's your happiness coming from? I love your smile. Anything. But to comment on anything that can be construed as in the weight vein, you are now creating a problem.
You're right. This is going to be a lifelong thing for you to try to teach the world to do this. It's very difficult.
It is very difficult, but the message has to get out.
Your book is here in the library. I got it. There's a digital copy. Was the one that we had. So when? So how long has it been out? Are you planning on another at some point?
Great question. My book has been out since the end of January. It's in a bunch of local libraries. I keep checking on it. It's always checked out. So I'm hoping more libraries will start carrying it.
I think the title is great because I think it's very honest. Like, there's nothing, there's nothing like, you know, it's not trying to be like this.
Say the title again.
The title is OMG, You Think I'm Fat. And that literally comes from that moment when the kid realizes that you think they're fat.
Because,
like, you all of a sudden you say to your child, did you need that second piece of cake? Did you really need to eat that? Yeah. And the kid's like, oh my God, you think I'm fat.
Right.
And at that moment, we have just created a problem.
But it's good because that's exactly what it's what you know you're picking up when you pick up your book. You know, it's not like, it's not flour, it's not sugar coating, it's very honest about that moment.
And the people who need to read the book the most, it's hardest for them.
Right.
And there's so much resistance. I know Evelyn wasn't like dying to read it, though I gave it to her months ago.
Well, that's
she took her time.
I have a lot of other things to read. I'm a reader's services librarian.
Of course. But we've had some private chats. I'm like, hey, hello, my book is for you.
No doubt about it. Your book is for me and for my mother.
Right. And you know what?
She's not going to be listening to this podcast, by the way.
Okay.
It's a really, really tough. It's the one area where really good, caring parents can't get it right. That they just completely.
You know what? We want to give them the food. Like, I still to this day, I bring in the cookies and I bring in the crap because I want them to be happy. Even though they're not, they shouldn't be eating it and I shouldn't be eating it. But it's there because you want your child to be happy.
Okay, so listeners, I want you to note my dramatic eye roll on that.
It was there. I watched it and Evelyn watched it too.
Because, I mean, here's the thing. I think that kids can have an amazing, happy, incredible life with some crap, but not a huge amount of crap. And when my kids were like trying to make weight for wrestling and they'd say, Mom, look, I'm eating only chicken or salad for this many weeks, I would respect that. And even if their favorite Klondike bars were on sale, you 2 for $4, I left it at the store.
That's what I have to learn to do.
Right.
When it's on sale, buy one, get one free. I don't need to.
You don't need any.
Okay.
Point of purchase. Because if I can't resist it, again, how do I expect my kid to resist it? I can't ask them to do something I can't do.
Well, what I tend to do is buy things I don't like.
But you don't want your daughter to eat it either. So here you go. You bring it into your house, and then she starts eating it. But you're her supplier.
I am the supplier.
And now you're getting all twitchy. Right. And she's like, what, Ma? You bought this for me. Right. What? What?
Why is it here?
Right. If you don't want me to eat it, why is it here?
Exactly. It will not be there.
Well, parents send mixed messages, yes. And it's very, very confusing. You're like, okay, food is love. I love you so much. Here's the food, but don't eat it.
Correct. Absolutely. You are right.
Yeah. And
well, your kids are young still. So
well,
it starts. No, yeah. But it starts. Because here's the thing. Parents like to bribe their children to eat their vegetables, right? If you don't promise them dessert, how else are they going to eat their vegetables? But they're better off missing a few vegetables.
If you eat your broccoli, I'll give you cauliflower.
Right. But they're better off missing their vegetables than you, like, holding dessert for ransom.
What's wrong with a piece of watermelon for dessert?
Nothing.
Nothing wrong with that. Or a nice mango.
And the other thing is that, like I was talking about how everything about how we live is trying to make us fat. So at home, you can also use those same principles by if you want to eat, your kids eat more fruit, that's what you keep on the counter.
Absolutely.
And I'm not saying don't have cookies in your house, but I don't have them on my counter. They're in a cabinet. They have
to
work to get it. Because if you walk by and you see a box of cookies, you're just going to grab one. They're just going to grab one. But if they see an apple, that's what they're going to grab. And you know what? My joke is if my kids saw dog food, they'd eat that too. Whatever's out on the counter.
Mine are a little pickier than that.
No dog food?
No. Even the dog won't eat the dog food. The dog even wants the regular food in our house.
Right. And why is that? Because you set that up that the dog even knows regular food exists.
And it's better. Yep. I don't. The others all do. I don't.
Oh man,
yeah, this is a very hard topic.
It is
and
really
it does
hard.
Damage relationships. It makes it difficult to talk. You don't want to go swimming with your parents. You don't want to go out with them. You don't want to do anything because it's gonna warrant a look or a pinch.
My mom can tell my weight within 1 pound.
No.
Hey, I can lose a pound. Hey, you lost a pound. Right. And so you may think, what's wrong with that? She has a superpower, right?
She should be in a carnival. Guess you my weight. So,
but when you say something like that, you're showing that you're watching.
Right.
And as soon as I know you're watching, now I'm uncomfortable about mm-hmm. things.
When I gain weight, I'll walk into my mother's house and she'll be like, how's that diet going? And I know right away she saw that I gained weight. Because when I lose weight, she just tells me how good I look.
So, and there you have it.
I know the difference.
I
think right there.
One thing that kills me as, somebody who had children and I had a difficult pregnancy and I'm small and I had twins, I'll see everywhere, like on magazines, people talk about like people's postpartum bodies. You know, is Megan going to snap back after she had her baby? This actress had twins and look, they're like back down to, and it's like, and it's everywhere. It's in your, when you're food shopping. And I think like your body changes partum and postpartum. It's really emotional and you're being judged by the media because you're supposed to hold a mirror against these celebrities, which really you shouldn't be, but this is what everybody does, you know. And then you get that at home too.
Again, everyone always loves to point to the media, that the media is why we're so obsessed with thinness. It's the media's fault.
I don't think it's their fault. I just think they're, you know, it's like it's they're contributing to the conversation for sure.
Not disagreeing with that, but again, I feel it's much closer to home. The media is doing something, but it's very easy to say to yourself, well, that's an actress or that's a supermodel. When it's coming from your mom,
oh, yeah.
Your grandma, it's like it's perhaps too big of a punch.
But what about when your mom is like, you know, Pink, she gained 60 pounds and she snapped right back. Like, you know, like, what's up with you? Like, so like, in a way, like the media becomes like a super mom for your mom to point to and be like, and then you could be like, yeah, but that person probably has personal trainers and chefs up there. And they're just like, no. She gained 60 pounds during her pregnancy and then it was gone. So you should too. It's really,
she doesn't even have to do her own food shopping.
It's really crazy how I speak from experience. People will take somebody they see who they don't know, who clearly has resources and time that us working moms don't have, and be like, you should be like that person. And you're just like, yeah, no, you know, parental figure whose, you know, trust I have put in you in my whole life. It's not that I should. You can. It's not realistic.
Talk about resources. Look at Oprah. She bought Weight Watchers.
Right,
and now if we can just take 1 minute, can we talk about the Weight Watchers app that came out? So this new app came out and it's targeted for children as young as 8 years old.
Oh, my God.
And I'm obviously 100% against it. And it goes with a red light, green light, yellow light type
There's
food
a doctor
system.
On Long Island that does that. Or a nutritionist on Long Island that does that.
Yes.
So they copied her.
I'm sure that a lot of people have gone that approach.
Yeah.
But really, Weight Watchers wants your business for life. So they tapped into, now I can get you from when you're 8 years old to when you're 80 years old, because the diet will never work and you will be constantly chasing something that's elusive. And cannot come out strongly enough against that. And again, teaching your child to count calories, or like the equivalent of counting calories, the calories in something is the least interesting thing about food. And if you make a decision based on calories, I guarantee you're going to make a bad one.
I agree with you, because I don't think that, I mean, I know personally, they now on all chain restaurants, they have the calorie count listed, and I don't think it really helps. I mean, I remember somebody being like, well, it's supposed to help you make better choices for yourself.
My favorite quote was, someone said calories should have never left the lab, because basically the definition of a calorie is when you put a food in a calorimeter and you burn it, and that's how much energy comes out at the other end. But everybody's body is different. So, Jessica, you may eat something and you're getting 100 calories out of it, but you may be getting 140 calories out of it, and I may be getting 125 calories out of it. So whatever it says on the package, that's kind of meaningless information. Mm-hmm. Plus, they're allowed to be off by like 25%. So we're basing entire industries on complete false information.
And also, you never take into account what you're burning. Like, you running a marathon, you're going to burn a lot more calories than me just walking around the block.
Yes and no. A marathon is the exception. But anytime, no, you can't outrun your fork, actually. So whatever, let's say I got up early and went running this morning. My body's going to make sure that I'm stiller for the rest of the day. So whatever calories I burnt, and I'm using air quotes, there's no net calorie burn, because my body compensates for that.
Right.
So when you go to the gym and you're like, oh, I deserve to eat this because I just went to a Zumba class for 20 minutes, people can't understand why they're not losing weight and they're working out. It's because they're still eating too much.
Yeah, I have lost weight without exercising. I think the food is...
It's the 100%.
I think moderation is a huge deal, too. I mean, I will say, you know, like sometimes, like, I really just want to... So this is kind of an example from my own house, you know, and talking about having things and not having things. I find that when I have ice cream in my house, I eat less ice cream than if I go out for ice cream. And this is why. If I have a container of ice cream in my house, sometimes I just want to taste it. I want to just taste that, you know, Häagen-Dazs flavor, and I want to have a few spoonfuls, and I can put it back in my fridge, and I might not want it for, like, you know, and this doesn't apply to everybody, but just thinking about moderation in general. But if I go out and I get a sundae, like, you go to an ice cream place, of course, I'm going to get a giant ice cream sundae at Krish's, which is a great ice cream, local ice cream parlor that hasn't changed since the 50s. I'm going to just, like, take that whole thing and I'm going to eat it, you know, whereas, like, maybe just a taste would have been enough. I don't know.
And I'm the absolute
opposite. Really?
I've never had a sundae in my life.
Ah, interesting.
Because I've been dieting since I'm 10. I've never, ever had more than a scoop of ice cream with sprinkles.
Interesting.
But if I'm home, and there's a half gallon there, I can have.
Yeah, I don't
have a few cups.
I wouldn't. I would. I'm fine just taking a taste.
I only buy for me the proportion, the ones that are portioned out.
So two things. One of the stories I tell in my book is about a woman. She was actually a client of mine, and she's a hugely successful person. Mm-hmm. But she tells me a story about when she was a child that she was only allowed to get orange sherbet because her mom thought that was diet.
But yeah, that was a thing. Yes.
But her brothers were allowed to get whatever ice cream they wanted. Right. So, and she's an honor student and like a really good upstanding citizen. Her parents go away on vacation. She steals the car so she can get the ice cream that she wants. So, you know.
Well, I had cousins growing up that did not have a single piece of any treat, let's say fast food, treat, anything in their house. When they'd come to us, they were like so thrilled to have cookies and ice cream and everything because they never had it in their house.
Right.
So that's also a problem too. Like you can't deprive.
But every parent has to decide what they want to do. And whatever you decide, you have to be consistent. And you also have to realize you don't have eyes in the back of your head. Mm-hmm. So again.
Right. Once they get to a certain age, they're out and about in the world. And what are you going to do?
You can't control this. So like what I'm urging parents to do is they're not giving up control. They never had control. It's giving up the idea of control. So once you can do that, then you make peace with the situation because you can't control your daughter's weight.
I cannot.
And you know what? Like our family is our first influence, but as we get older, our friends become our influence. So I ask my clients, who's the fittest person you know? And some people can't even come up with one name. Not one name. So if you're not hanging out around with anybody fit, the odds of you being fit are very low because fitness is catching, but so is fatness. So we're really only as fit as who we hang around with. So I guess our big hope is that we do minimal damage, and as our kids grow up and make their own choices, that they surround themselves with people, you know, who is part of being all the other wonderful values we want their friends to have, is fitness is one of them.
I have a funny story. I have friends that are very fit. And we were talking about laundry one day. And she's like, well, do you do all the, you know, the exercise and workout clothes in a separate wash? And my husband and I look at each other like, we don't have workout clothes. Like, I'm sure if we did, I'd do a separate wash. So it's pretty funny because, like, they work out so much that they have enough clothes for that. And we have none. But I have fit friends, even though I'm not fit.
But you know,
why won't it rub off on me?
Well, that's it. I don't know. But the hope is that you know you'll get inspired by the people that you're hanging around with. I mean, like the story I tell in the book is one of my college roommates. She said she was running a marathon, and we were both in terrible shape. And I was like, "All right, if you could do it, I could do it," and that changed my life. Because two regular girls training for the New York City Marathon.
Very good.
She did something for me that my mother never could have done. Because my mom's paradigm of dieting, that's not for me. To eat as little as possible, that's not what I want to do. And that's not the life I want for my kids either. I want everyone to be healthy and strong.
Well, thank you so much. And I appreciate you coming in. I mean, you've always been here. You've always been here. And Evelyn and I, we really do appreciate you.
Yes, thank you so much for
talking about your book and sharing your experiences.
Well, thank you both so much for having me.
And you're going to be at our local author showcase.
Yes, so everybody come out and say hello.
Very cool.
Friday night, October 24th?
Fifth.
Fifth, 25th,
okay. I believe.
I don't know. Whatever the Friday night is that week.
And we
promise to have healthy snacks.
She's
cringing.
She's like, you're missing the
point.
I get
a nice big fruit.
You know what? Just before we sign off,
go for
if we can just get rid of the word healthy altogether, I'd be super happy about that.
So what's a better word?
Just no words. Because when you tell your kid, I just want you to be healthy, what they're hearing is, I just want you not to be fat.
Yeah.
So you think that you're being so stealthy about it. I'm only talking about health.
Well, sometimes the things that are considered healthy, like, in retrospect, people are like, oh, yeah, actually, that's not really healthy. Like, you know, like a lot of the diet snacks are not that healthy.
How about all of them?
I mean, like, it's in order to reduce sugar, something else has to be there to, you know, which affects you in some other way. I mean, I remember these reduced sugar muffins, which were not the best, but not the worst. And, you know, you're like, oh, this is so much healthier than the Otis Spunkmeyer muffin. And,
well,
you know,
Snackwell cookies.
And they're really not that, but they're not healthy. Snackwell, yeah.
Snackwell cookies?
I would love to have this conversation with you ladies.
We could make this a part two.
Have me back on.
Yes, we will. We are gonna make this part two. We're talking about maybe writing another book.
Another book, because I think I can fill an entire book
just
with
from
my.
Us. Just from Jeff.
Don't say healthy.
No, from my adventures with Snackwell cookies.
Right.
I like that.
Snackwell cookie adventure.
Does Snackwell still exist?
They have a small line. Not like
it's not came. Like it was. Right. I mean, I remember
so
when it was
other,
out in full force. Right. That was
people
around.
Like the first ones to do
yeah.
It, so.
Yeah. And we, like, they were always in my house. And let's make a date for Adventures in Snackwell Cookies with Madeline Berg.
Sounds like a plan.
Looking forward to it.
Well, for now, we're going to close this chapter of Turn the Page. And I want to thank again, Madeline. And
this is Evelyn signing off.
And we will be revisiting this topic because it's a good topic.
All right.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay.
It's time to close this chapter of Turn the Page. Join us for the next episode.